Did you enjoy your year of captaincy?
Yeah. I thought it was a great honour, but I'll be honest with you. At the end of it, I was glad to get out of it because I thought I had a bit of international rugby left in me, and it took a lot out of me being the captain. The captain of Gloucester was a big job, and I took a bit of a laissez-faire attitude to it. I knew we were good enough, so we were. Then a few things went wrong in early September. We used to have about, we played about 8 games in September for some reason. I don't know what to do with the coffers and how to get the games on. And we played Stroud, Coventry, the RAF, and on the next Saturday, four games, four, I can remember, we went to Fylde and lost. Billy Beaumont's first game it was against us. So that's what I mean by going wrong. But when I think about it, we should never have been playing that number of games. When the floodlights came, I don't know what year they came, but the 60s or something, 67.
Yes,
well, when they came, what it meant was the squad didn't get any bigger, but the fixture list did. And we played a lot of games there, so we were inevitably going to lose some games. And of course, I hadn't analysed it. I just thought, I'm the captain, and we lost a game. And that's when I went to get Dick Smith back. And I did enjoy it. Yeah, I did enjoy being the captain, and I thought it was a wonderful honour. But at the end of the year, they said, "Well, what do you want to do it again?" And I said, "No." When I was up at Leicester, I was all right for Gloucester because I didn't show them too much respect. You know, they used to come out like, and one of them would toss the coin. And I'd go, "Ed's hard luck." And the referee, so I thought the referee. I used to catch him before the play. You know, I didn't have a lot of time for him, you know, because when we went on the field, you see that I'd beat him already with something. You know, some little thing like that. But I get the ball. We always played Leicester. And it, I don't know what they used to take the straw off the pitch. And it was that deep in mud, middle of November. Just, I thought, what are we doing playing? The balls then were massive balls. Really. And we had Peter Butler. And I didn't used to give him a lot of kicks, you see. And he was a great kicker. I used to say, "Hey, Brittle. He used to call up for the kick, you see. And I said, "Ah, we'll run it. God, run it. What's he doing?" Some of these teams you'd be beating 30 points, like, you know. I said, "Ah, I don't want to kick for goal now." So we were struggling away at Leicester there in the mud and the blood and all that. And they got all the stuff off. It was hypothermia time, it was. You couldn't wait to get in the shower bath afterwards, you know. They had a big bath in Leicester. And I got this ball. I thought, well, this is the chance now. I'll have a kick. And I said, "Beat." And he caught me and went, "Come on." And he looked at me and he said, "Thanks a bunch." And I tossed the ball to him. It was like a balloon, it was. And I looked down. I made a mistake. I thought it was the halfway. It was the 10-yard line in our half. So he looked at me. He said, "Thanks a bunch." I thought he'd be disrespectful. I thought, I better not say sorry, because I didn't want anyone to know I'd made a mistake, you see. Anyway, he kicked it. He kicked the ball. He went, "Whoa." Yeah, it was unbelievable, it was.
I guess when you were captain, that caused you to have more dealings with the committee. And can you talk about one or two people on the committee then? I guess the eminence grise at Gloucester then was Arnold Alcott, wasn't it? The doc.
Yeah, Arnold Alcott was you know the people, when you arrive at a club, you're impressed with them. I think it's policemen, like a policeman when you're young, you think the policemen are taller, and when you get older, you think they're boys, don't you? Well, Arnold Alcott was an authoritative. When we played Guy's Hospital, his team, really, there would be a bottle and the glasses in each dressing room afterwards. Well, we had a glass of something with the president. And when I was first sent off, I was sent off four times in my life. And the first time I was sent off by probably the most honest referee who sent me off. It was H.T. Luxon of the Somerset Society. Very sadly, he passed away, and I'd said something like I've just said to you there, that he was probably the most honest referee, because he called what he saw, you know, and he said that was it. Well, the others, I'm not too sure about. I'll come to that later. And his son rang me, this chap, and he said, "Do you remember H.T. Luxon?" I said, "If I saw him, I said I wouldn't recognise him, but I remember he made a decision, which I disagreed with at the time." But it was one of those things, and I didn't hold any sort of malice for him, you know. And the chap was pleased with that. Remind me what you come back to. You asked me in the first place.
Asking you about the Doc Alcock.
The Doc Alcock. So I was sent off then, you see, and Peter Ford lived in Denmark Road, and the press was around the door, and what's going on, and what did he do? And anyway, I'd trodden all over this bloke in a ruck, which All Blacks seemed to be doing 8 at a time, but me on my own, I'm off. So anyway. They sort of whisked me out the side door, and I couldn't quite believe it was that important, really, to be honest. And they whipped me around to Fordy's house where they sat me down, and Ken Taylor came round with me and said, "Don't worry, you'll be all right." And I don't know what they're going to say. And all these journalists were there clamouring at, who is this boy, this bloody upstart? And anyway, I'd had afternoon tea and cakes. And I felt quite good by about 6 o'clock. They made a phone call. They said, "They've all gone." So I said, "Right, well." And we walked into the gates opposite the White Hart, and along in front of the old stand there, that was at the Worcester Street end of the ground. And as we were walking along, we got to by the posts, and coming the other way was Dr. Arnold Alcock. And he said to me, "Yeah," he said, "you got the president's year on." So, what's going to happen now? And they introduced me to him. They said, "Dr. Alcock, this is Mike Byrne, who's sent off today, and he's very unfortunate." And he said, "Yes," he said. "Well, remember, son," he said, "all the good ones have walked, and it happened to me once." And he walked past. So I didn't feel then that I was, by the time I got to the clubhouse, I was back into where I was. And he was an elderly gentleman then, you know, that sort of, describe him. He had the waistcoat and the watch and chain, and that bulbous blue nose that said he loved a glass of whiskey. So, you know, was that a nice way to say it? Yeah. You know? But he was a great character in the way that he handled that for me.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tom Voice?
Well, Tom Voice lived, well, I lived in Tewkesbury Road. He lived not next, there was the vicar next door, then Tom's house. And of course, old Tom, he was full of all those stories. And I see him on a Sunday morning coming down for a drink. He used to bring the children down there, Mervyn Elway, around the old club, you know. And I used to bring my kids down and have a shandy on a Sunday morning and walk back. He's only 200 yards sort of thing. And I used to walk back with Tom. And of course, he later on in life, his eyesight was very bad. He was almost blind, you know. But he would always have a story for you. And he was a gentleman. He spoke with a very fine accent. And he'd been president of the rugby union by then. And one day he said, you'll have to come across one day and have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. And I said, "Well, thank you." And I didn't really want to be, because committee men in those days were committee men, but I knew he was a special player.
Yeah.
He played in the 1920s,
yeah.
And he played 27 times then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, it's quite easy today. If you played international rugby today, there's 10 games a season. You know, when I played, there was two at Twickenham, and there was, wasn't that five, six, it was five. So for him to play 27 times, today he'd have won 70 or 80 caps.
Yeah.
If you think what he was.
Yeah. Well, Wavell Wakefield, the England captain through that era, always said that he would write Tom Voice's name on the team sheet first.
Well, that's wonderful. But it's wonderful that you say those names, because some of the things he showed me when he went in there, he took me to his house and we had the cup of tea. And he showed me all the flags when he was president that quartered off in the names of the countries that he'd overseen this as an administrator. And then he showed me the scrapbooks. And there was, he said, "And here, there was a silver salver for his wedding. The team had bought him this, and they'd engraved it." He said, "There's Davis and Kershaw, all the halfbacks, one of the Royal Navy." He said, "There's Wakers, and he was so." He said, "I should have scored twice against Wales." He said, "I was screaming for the ball." He said, "But Wakefield kept it." The way he talked about those legendary figures in that, and I had the privilege of going to his front room and looking at all that. And then he showed me one where the chap was on his knee, and it was against Wales. He said it was a terrible game. He said, "Against the Welsh." He said, "We went to war." I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, someone turned him on his ear there. The Englishman lost an ear." I went, "Lost an ear?" He said, "Yeah." And then, and at that time, they were talking about increased violence in sport. And I said, "Well," and he said he lost it. He'd torn it off. It was just left hanging on. And of course, he said the referee had judged that it was an accident. Oh, in those days, to be sent off, you'd have to kick someone. He said, "But I was on the field when Brownlee went." There was an All Black called Cyril Brownlee, who went and. Tom, I don't know whether he was on the field, I don't know the history of it all, but Tom sort of bowed his head with some reverence when he mentioned that, because he was sad that someone was sent off, you know.
Yeah. I think he was the first international player sent off.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. And I think there was, I've never got to the bottom of the role which Tom Voice played in this.
Oh.
I think there was a hint that Tom might have done something that provoked Brownlee.
Well, certainly his conversation with me, he never did that, and he he never mentioned. I mean, but Tom, yeah. Tom was always a gentleman, though. He talked all that that he achieved. He talked in a matter of fact sort of way, and he said things like Davis and Kershaw. You remember Wakers, and he talked about those people as if I knew them, but I did. I'd heard of them. But you know those blokes. He talked about Bubs Carpenter, Digger, those. You know, Jigger done all those fellas. You know, the chap that he's like today's Andrew Hazel, really. But he didn't get any caps. Andrew Hazel played for England a couple of times, or whatever it was. But yes. Well, Jigger, he'd be another a Coney Hill boy. Whenever I saw him, you know, I'd stop and spend the time of day with him. And he said to me, I saw him in the Northgate shopping centre. His sister was Roy Folk's wife. And they were sitting and having a cup of tea. And I was going by to the barber's. So I thought, I ain't going to miss this. So I'll go and have a chat to one. So he said, hello, are you all right, Mick? And that's a wonderful thing about Gloucester after all those years.
Yeah.
You're talking. And, of course, Roy...
How about Arthur Hudson? Did you...
I didn't see him. I know because I deal with John Hudson, his grandson now. So right. I've done, of course, Gordon.
Yeah.
I only know of his record. He scored 4 tries against France in the 20s.
Yeah, in Paris.
Yeah. And so when you hear those stories, you know how good they must have been. But of course, there's no folklore about him because he was quite exceptional. He's like Johnny May now. We've got a Gloucester winger in the team.
Yeah.
And he was a Gloucester winger that could achieve all this. Gloucester aren't famous for that.
Yeah.
You know? But it's just that talking about Jigger. There was one who works in the cattle market, who didn't have any education, and yet when I started talking to him, he was telling me about how the game today resembles rugby league. He said, and, you can lay up far more than you could in our day, mind, because, you know, you had to give them a bit of room, didn't you? Now the rest was a bit stricter on that. He said, and the way he talked about the modern game, you know, it was, you know, lovely to hear that. I had to try and listen to his opinion on who's playing today and who's... And, I said, well, they do all right now. And he said, God, blimey, you look someone out, wouldn't you? You know, because he plays as an amateur all his life.
Yeah.